I remember getting blown up and waking up sitting in the vehicle, which was unusual because I'd gotten blown up 6 times prior to this one, and I'd never fallen.
But it seemed dark to me because I had my eye blown out of the side of my head, and the other eye had been popped out, and there was blood all over.
Perhaps you've heard a lot of stories like these from Iraq and Afghanistan, but maybe not so many like these.
I just got down in his face, and I just said, "This is your mother, and you will not die." And he moved his arm. I was not going to accept that he was going to be a vegetable.
I can't go to the doctor or anywhere because I don't have any health insurance. I just pray that God is going to give me health and strength to take care of Siobhan.
This hour from Primetime Radio, Picking Up the Pieces, how family and faith are healing veterans home from war. Join us. I'm Mike Cuthbert with a special edition of Primetime Radio. Every day, U.S. military doctors and their staffs perform miracles in Iraq and Afghanistan. Soldiers who get their arms or legs blown off, and others who have their heads blown open or their brains rattled, are surviving injuries that would have been fatal in any previous war. Many will live long and rewarding lives. Others won't. But the care of these survivors is often falling on their families. Mothers and fathers of our wounded veterans are putting their lives on hold, giving up their jobs, leaving, even losing their homes, and spending down their retirement savings to care for their sons and daughters. These are their stories, reported by Barry Yeoman, contributing editor to AARP the magazine.
If you've arrived at Walt Disney World this autumn day, expecting an escape from the real world, you might be surprised when you check into the Dolphin Resort just outside the Magic Kingdom. Here, you would see dozens of young men and women back from Iraq and Afghanistan. Some are using wheelchairs and canes to get around, or they're leaning on the arms of loved ones. Others carry noticeable burn wounds. They have come to this gathering of the Coalition to Salute America's Heroes to attend a job fair, learn about benefits, and relax with others who understand what war is like. Dave Reaver understands. Reaver was burned over most of his body when a phosphorus grenade exploded right next to him. That was in Vietnam, where he was part of an elite Navy unit. Now, Reaver is a motivational speaker with a flair for humor and a special interest in wounded veterans. He asks for a stool to sit on and gives a quick wave of thanks when someone brings one to him.
No problem. Okay, that means thumbs up. You got to have a thumb, though. My thumb was blown off, and I've spoken sign language since I was a child, and now I speak sign language with a lisp. I'm kind of like thumb-tied. They made this out of my hip. I don't even know if it's a thumb or a hip. I don't suck it, I'll tell you that. It's like... It's fun to hear you laugh this morning. It's great to hear you laugh this morning. I will laugh all morning.
Among those in the crowd, it's hard not to notice 26-year-old Rory Dunn. He's a handsome man with a shaggy beard and an eye patch that sets off his mischievous grin. Later, when he talks about the explosion he survived in Iraq just before his 22nd birthday, I marvel that he's here at all.
And I remember a large, gigantic white flash. And it seemed to me to be it was dark. But as I come to find out, it was like 10:30 a.m. It was light, but it seemed dark to me because I had my eye blown out of the side of my head, and the other eye had been popped out, and there was blood all over. So the truck went up on, it really rocked us back. I remember getting slammed off to the side. The truck was up on two wheels. So now the driver, he did a good job of keeping the truck under control, because if it would have rolled over, we would have all died in the back. Come to a stop, I remember knowing that something bad just happened. I didn't feel any pain. I had no idea that my eyes had been popped out of my head. I just thought it was dark. I remember somebody telling me. I couldn't see whose face it was because it was dark. And every time, sit down, sit down. So I finally, sat down. And as I sat down, then that's when I blacked out.
As compelling as these war stories are, I'm not here to interview soldiers like Rory Dunn. Instead, I've come to Orlando to talk with people like Rory's mother and stepfather, Cynthia and Stan Lefevre. That's because our soldiers and Marines are coming home with life-changing injuries that in previous wars would have killed them. Often the responsibility for their healing falls on their parents. Veterans organizations estimate that some 10,000 returning service members are receiving care from their mothers and fathers, an older generation invisibly pressed into service. Many found their lives changed with a single phone call. For Cynthia, that call came from Murray's captain.
I knew something was really wrong, but I didn't know what. And he started telling me that Rory had been critically injured by a roadside bomb outside Fallujah.
Details were sparse, and it was 5 days before Rory was stable enough to be evacuated from Iraq, before the pressure in his brain subsided enough to allow him to get on a plane. Cynthia Lefevre's official orders allowing her to join her son at a military hospital in Landstuhl, Germany, carried the phrase imminent death, word she's glad she didn't read at the time. When Rory's medevac plane arrived in Germany from Baghdad, Cynthia was there.
And so they were like, well, we don't really think you should see him right away. And I'm like, sorry. And, they said, it's better if you're not there when he comes off the medevac. It's going to be very disturbing. I said, sorry. So at 4 o'clock, we lined up outside the emergency room doors, and they brought him off this bus feet first. And he was naked, wrapped in a blanket, hooked up to every kind of hose and tube and wire you can think of. And it was very, very disturbing. But they let me step up and hold his hand.
Just for a moment.
Just for a moment. And I was bound determined not to leave his side until he was okay. They took him in, did an assessment. They let us in the room to see him. And as I said, during my private alone time with Rory, I just got down in his face and I just said, this is your mother and you will not die. And he moved his arm. And that was it for me. There was no turning back, no leaving him. I was not going to accept that he was going to be a vegetable.
Rory didn't die, and he definitely didn't become a vegetable. The Rory I meet is a popular figure at this annual Road to Recovery conference, but his own road has been long and tough and is still incomplete, and his mom in particular has been there every step of the way.
I packed one bag and went to Germany and then went straight to Walter Reed, and I was there for almost a year.
She didn't come home for 10 months.
I didn't get home at all for 10 months. I lived in a hotel room. When Murray became outpatient, we roomed together in this hotel room, the Malone House at Walter Reed. I mean, that's just like cruel and unusual punishment for a 20-year-old kid and for the mother, because the dynamic is that this is a 22-year-old guy who is living with his mom.
That wouldn't have been easy under the best of circumstances. But when Rory woke up after his injury, he was, in his mom's words, a real handful. One of the main symptoms of traumatic brain injury, or TBI, is an altered personality. Like many people with TBI, Rory became impulsive, lacked short-term memory, couldn't deal with crowds, couldn't handle many of the details of daily life. Lucky for him, his mother has a master's degree in adult education with a strong background in psychology and in working with special needs populations. Because she thought the hospital wasn't doing enough, she took charge of Rory's care.
The frontal lobe injury requires a structured day. They have to function within structure, and they have to relearn social filters. They have to practice. You can teach the brain to stay in bed, self-medicate, abuse drugs and alcohol, or for up to 3 years, the brain will rewire, and it can relearn normal daily activities and responses, and again, the cognitive part where he came back so strong.
But his emotional recovery was tougher. They reached a juncture where Cynthia feared for Rory's life.
At the point where Rory was outpatient and became suicidal and said, you know, I'm going to kill myself. I don't want to live this way. I can't stand the hospital. I can't stand the military. I will not deal with it. If I could get my hand on a gun, if I could do this, if I could do that, I'm going to kill myself. So mom has to do 24-hour suicide watch. Mom's not sleeping. Mom's not starting to do too well.
But this is where I can finish my comment, that his mother seemed to find this balance of providing him the care he needed, but also recognizing and pushing him to become independent.
Stan Lefevre, Cynthia's husband, is not Rory's biological father, but he has taken a key supporting role in Rory's healing. He works as a manager for Boeing. After taking 6 weeks off to get the recovery underway, he needed to go back to work. He asked his supervisor for some flexibility in his schedule and began working 4 10-hour days each week. Every other weekend, he'd fly across the country from Seattle to D.C. on a red eye to spend 4 days with his wife and stepson. It was a stressful period in the couple's relationship.
I can see how marriages fail because the closeness is just gone. And our intimacy was interrupted for a very long time. It's just not really healthy because it was almost like we became almost strangers that just were dealing with the everyday practical. And I took my frustrations out on Stan.
It was was the primary caregiver to Rory, and I was the caregiver to the caregiver.
Right.
Right. And so we ended up in this role, you know. And you were amazing. She was like a mother bear taking care of her cub, and nothing was gonna come between that, you know. And so I don't know how she coped, but she did it just because of her love for her son and her dedication. And then I tried to be there to support her.
Meanwhile, Rory's progress was slow but steady. When his sister invited him to her wedding not long after the injury, some of the other members of the family weren't sure they were ready to deal with his physical and psychological impairments, but his sister insisted he come to celebrate with her.
The rest of the family is like, no, he's in a wheelchair, his social skills, it's just not going to work, it's going to be too much trouble, and so he had to go through a panel.
Mm-hmm.
An assessment to see whether he could go home and be seen in public. And, of course, I'm just outraged because this is the reality of this war and what happened. And if we don't treat him normal, he's not going to act normal.
This is a panel of whom?
Psychologists, psychiatrists, and his doctor. And
doctors were okay.
His medical doctors were like, Rory needs a break from the hospital. He just needs a break. He needs to be out of the hospital. He needs to be around family and friends, and he needs to go home. And so I was like, we're going to take him home for this wedding. And so I'm battling the rest of the family. And the psychiatrist and the psychologist are like, no, you know, this is not going to be good for him.
Bear in mind, he doesn't have his forehead yet at the time.
No forehead. He's wearing a helmet to protect his brain. Mm-hmm. Can't see because he had just gotten the cornea transplant, and he still can't see. He's still in a wheelchair. But he went through this panel, and they were asking him these questions about, well, how are you going to feel, you know, being around crowds? And they're asking him all these questions. And the psychiatrist says, you know, aren't you a little nervous, you know, the way you look and, you know, being around family and friends and everybody's going to see the way you are? Aren't you a little nervous? And Rory said, why should I be nervous? I'm not the one getting married. And so they just said, you're good to go.
The doctor looked up, smiled, and said, you can go.
And so we just packed him up.
That's a sense of humor.
And I will email you a picture. He walked his sister halfway down the aisle, got out of his wheelchair with his helmet and his dark glasses, and walked his sister.
In a tuxedo.
In a tuxedo.
The trip home for the wedding was a milestone for Rory, who has continued to improve, to the point that if you met him on the street, you would see he was injured, but you wouldn't automatically assume he was nearly killed in Iraq. But as Rory got better, his mom got worse.
And so, as Rory became more independent, self-sufficient, bought his own home, resumed hunting, resumed his outdoor lifestyle, we still spent a lot of time together, but I had a lot of time on my hands, and I wasn't able to go back to work. And I found myself in the doctor's office, depressed and unhappy and not knowing what to do with myself. And she very quickly diagnosed me with secondary PTSD. And so I remained under a doctor's care for that. But I also remain very committed to Rory and to our service members. And so I have had to achieve a balance for myself.
Rory's recovery isn't done yet, and he may never be back to the same person he was before the pair of roadside bombs blew up his truck. But he's got enough self-awareness to keep moving ahead, and he's got a clear sense of his shortcomings.
My fuse is a lot shorter. I don't have much patience for stupid people. if you can't use common sense, it just incredibly drives me crazy. People, you know, I've got a bomb wrapped around, you know, wrapped off my head. You know, my frontal lobe is all smashed up. I'm still able to use common sense. Mm-hmm. And I can't stand the noise of screaming kids. I get irritated easy. I have to try to calm down and stay cool, which is not always easy. It's different than when I used to be able to maintain it a little bit better. It can be a real crab apple, but it can also be nice, too. See, you know, with all the injuries I could have sustained, amputees, paralyzation, I've seen myself being okay in the long run with overcoming the disabilities. Yeah, it sucks. I wish I wouldn't have gotten wrapped over the head.
Cynthia Lefevre gave up a lot to nurse her son. But for the first time since his injury, she's optimistic about his future, at least in the long term.
I don't know if it's going to be in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. I believe Rory is destined for something really great. And sometimes we think, you know, with his sense of humor, he'd be like the most awesome radio show host. And other times I think with his compassion and big heart and his ability to understand where other people are coming from, that he would make an awesome counselor, social worker.
When we come back, more stories of pain and hope from around the country. And later we'll travel to Nashville, where an Iraq war veteran is starting a new life as a country music singer-songwriter. When Picking Up the Pieces continues.
You're listening to Picking Up the Pieces, how family and faith are healing veterans home from war. You can find out more about families caring for their veteran sons and daughters at aarp.org/Iraq Vets. There you can read an investigative report by Barry Yeoman, see a television special presented by Jane Pauley featuring ABC newsman Bob Woodruff, and see segments on caregiving for veterans from our TV shows Inside E Street and My Generation. Here again is Barry Yeoman and Picking Up the Pieces.
We've just been visiting with Cynthia Lefevre, her son Rory Dunn, and her husband Stan. We heard how draining it was for Cynthia to devote herself to Rory's recovery, even with Stan's love and support. In San Antonio, Texas, Cindy Parsons has been nursing her son Shane without any such support. Shane's dad died when he was 6 months old, and she was 29. Two of his grandfathers served in the military, one in World War II and one in Korea. So when the country was a